MLB saw two no-hit bids lost to home runs last night in a wild night of baseball. We'll break it all down on this episode of First Pitch. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch, your home for news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Christian Rau. You can follow him on Twitter at Christian S. Rau, R-A-U-H. And Christian, what an absolutely wild night of baseball across Major League Baseball last night. But I think I want to start off with, we had a couple no-hitters go pretty late into the game, including a name that we've heard before, Bowden Francis, the Toronto Blue Jays starter, was in the ninth inning against the New York Mets when, unfortunately, he had to face Francisco Lindor, who did this.
That's driven to deep right field, and a home run ends this no-hit bid. Linsanity! Francisco Lindor ties the game with a ninth inning home run. As big a hit as the Mets have had all season, Francisco Lindor breaks up the no-hit bid and the shutout, and he ties the game with his 31st home run of the year, and it's 1-1 in the ninth.
Did I hear a Linsanity in there?
A throwback. It's a New York thing, I guess. Wow. Here's what's wild with this game. New York wins this game 6-2. There being no hit into the ninth. Bowden Francis actually had a perfect game into the fifth. He hit Pete Alonso with a pitch, and then he walked Starling Marte to lose the perfect game. But he kept the no-hitter going, lost a no-hitter in the ninth. And again, they go on to win 6-2. I want to talk about Bowden Francis. I want to talk about Francisco Lindor. But Francis first. Since joining the rotation in seven starts, 48 innings, he's allowed 16 total hits, 5 walks to 46 strikeouts. So it's a 150 ERA. It's a 0.44 whip.
Wow.
And 9.2 strikeouts per 9 innings. This is the second lowest opponent's batting average, 0.092. Second lowest opponent's batting average over a 6-start span in MLB's live ball era since 1920. So, not just the first any 6-game span. So think about all the guys we've had in baseball since 1920. Greg Maddux, like all of these dominant guys. This is the second lowest opponent batting average ever. And Bowden Francis is the last pitcher to lose 2 no-hitters in the ninth inning since 1989. And the guy who did it there, Nolan Ryan. So
great company.
How surprising is just the sheer dominance of Bowden Francis?
Surprising is a good way to say it, because I didn't see this coming. He had a fantastic August, and he ended it with that, you know, almost no hit bid, as you mentioned, the first time around against the Angels. But he finished the month. He was named pitcher of the month, and for good reason, with a 1.05 ERA. I mean, are you kidding me? Insane for, and that's out of 34 innings pitched. It's not like he had that kind of numbers as a reliever. He did that as a starting pitcher. That is reliever type ERA numbers, though.
Yeah.
And then he does it again against the Mets yesterday. And I really thought he was going to do it. He had Lindor in an 0-2 count before that home run. And then the floodgates just opened up, though, Lindsey. New York Mets, I thought they, you know, the Blue Jays looked like they had him dead to rights. And that's a huge deal right now with the NL playoffs going on, and the Mets just, I mean, cue the Undertaker gif when he wakes up from the casket. I mean, that is exactly what the Mets did, and they wound up just crushing to win this game. But this Toronto Blue Jays squad, like their squad in general, we don't talk about them enough this year because they're not doing great, but there are a lot of players on this team that are actually having some really great numbers, some really good seasons. Spencer Horowitz is one of them, and of course Vlad Guerrero Jr. is another one as well, but no one's discussing them. One, because they're the only Canadian team, and if you get a chance to not talk about them, I feel like the media doesn't like to do so, but also because they're last in the AL East. But I think they deserve a lot more credit than what they've deserved the last couple weeks, if you will. because they're actually a good ball club, and I think they're just having a weird season. I think they'll be right back in the mix in 2025.
Yeah, and you kind of look at the free agency situations here for these guys, kind of looking, perusing the roster right now, and you kind of see it's, you know, you bring back Kevin Gausman, you bring back Chris Bassett. Obviously, they're going to have Bowden Francis. They you know, Jose Berrios is back. They traded away Yusei Kikuchi, yes, but you've got guys there. I think the only piece that you're losing after this year is Ryan Yarbrough. Like, everybody else is either an arbitration eligible or signed to a long-term deal, or just not even eligible for free agency yet. Like, not even eligible for arbitration yet. So not a ton of roster turnover. Now, granted, you do run the risk of, you know, next year is Bo Bichette's last year. Obviously, you know, you've got Chris Bassett's last year is next year. A lot of guys could walk after this, but it feels like you have the core, and with a couple strategic moves, you could be right back into it in a very, very tough AL East division. The flip side of this, the New York Mets, I mean, before we do that, one of the news reports that I read about this game said it was almost the fifth no-hitter, there's been five no-hitters this year. This was almost the sixth. And I had to think about who were the other no-hitters. And I'm like, Blake Snell did one, Dylan Cease did one, Ronel Blanco did one. And I'm like, what is the fourth no-hitter that they're talking about of these four no-hitters? And it's like, they're talking about the Cubs combined no-hitter. And I'm like, I don't group those all together, right? Like, I don't say, oh yeah, we had four no-hitters, Dylan Cease, Blake Snell, Ronel Blanco, and three Cubs pitchers. Like, you don't think the combined no-hitter goes in that group. So back to that question from last week, real quick, do you think we should say there's been four no-hitters this year or three no-hitters this year?
I'm still an advocate that saying that combined no-hitters are no-hitters, but I do think you need to differentiate when you are discussing that in the context that you're referring to. In this case, if there were four times where no-hitters happened, you need to say that there were three no-hitters, one combined no-hitter. And I think you need to differentiate that. And, yeah, and I know it's tough when you're doing it in writing, but I think you can save the extra sentence.
Yeah, I think the AP got it right. When I read their takeaway, they said there was a combined no-hitter by the Chicago Cubs after complete game efforts by these three players.
That's in
the
a day. Great so way like, to say it.
Complete that's a game great effort. Way to do it, because I guess they're acknowledging it is a no-hitter, but it was different from the rest. So either way.
I like
but that. No, go into the Mets real quick, though. Best record in baseball since May 30th. They're 57-33. With Atlanta's loss last night to Washington Nationals and the finale of that series, another terrible offensive showing for Atlanta. New York is now back to a one-game lead in the National League wild card for that final spot. And it all kind of feels powered by Francisco Lindor, batting .268, .340, .492, 31 homers, 27 stolen bases, 6.5 WAR. Is there a chance, especially if they make the postseason and Atlanta misses, is there a chance that Francisco Lindor jumps Marcell Ozuna for the runner-up in the MVP race behind Shohei Ohtani? Because we all are pretty much resigned to the fact that Ohtani is going to win the MVP.
I'm going to go on a limb here and think it's already happened. I know there's big conversations right now about East Coast bias, West Coast bias between the Shohei Ohtani, Francisco Lindor talk, but no one's really discussing Marcell Ozuna. And I think that has a lot to do with, one, the Braves not looking great right now. And also, Ozuna's in a slump. He's been in this home run slump for quite some time now. And recency bias, I don't care. If anybody says it doesn't happen, it absolutely happens when it comes in the award races. If somebody has the same amount of stats, the winner is almost always the person who had a better second half. It almost always happens. So I think it's already happened. I think that's what we're going to end up finishing. Like, if the voting ended today, I think we have Shohei Ohtani as your MVP and Francisco Lindor as your runner-up.
Yeah, to your note on the slump there, he hasn't hit a home run since August 20th, a span of 21 games. It is by far his longest homer drought of the season. He's still producing. It's a .280 batting average during that stretch, but it's a lot of he only has four extra base hits, so his slugging's only .333. It's a .690 OPS. I do think with Ozuna, you also have a little bit of issues because of his past legal troubles. There are people out there who do not care for him because of that. And so I think an excuse to vote for somebody else over him, whether or not they admit it, would be welcomed by some of the media members who vote on those awards. So I think that's probably part of it as well. But either way, it does feel like Lindor, especially with the surge the Mets have had, feels like Lindor is going to be the is going to end up being the runner up for MVP. And although their offense hasn't been amazing recently, they just continue to win. It kind of reminds me of 2021, where the Atlanta Braves struggled, and then after they made all those trades at the trade deadline, from that point on, like, everybody talks about how they made the World Series with like 80 something wins, but from the trade deadline on to the end of the season, they had the best record in baseball. And so their overall record isn't necessarily emblematic of how good the team is as a whole. Same thing with the Mets. They're 80-66, but I feel like they're playing, especially in the second half, they've played more like a team that you would expect to finish with 95, close to 100 wins in the second half.
Yep, I'm with you 100%. That's a really good point.
Yeah. We went pretty long on that. The other no-hit bid was the Mariners versus the Padres. Brian Wu was perfect into the seventh inning until he had to face Francisco Tatis, who did this.
Driven to left field on a line towards the pole. It is gone. Breaks up the perfect bid with one out in the seventh. It's a home run for Fernando. His 16th of the year. Padres needed that, and they're on the board. Perfecto, no more.
Dan Orsillo is one of my favorite commentators. Oh, I love the way that he says things.
I love listening to him.
Yeah, 115 miles per hour, by the way, was that home run. I mean, he was ready. Fernando Tatis Jr. was ready to get this one out of the ballpark. But yeah, I love Orsillo.
Those of you on audio, you didn't see it, but as soon as Tatis hit it, he just dropped the bat. He knew it was gone. It was on a line down the left field line. Not to be outdone, Fernando Tatis also made, he not only put runs on the board, he also took runs off the board a little bit later in the game.
Fly ball to right field, sending Fernando back towards the wall. He leaps and makes the catch. Fernando made the grab in right. Why? Because he is Fernando.
Again,
Orsillo makes me want to run for a wall, man. Dude, gosh. I don't know what was more exciting, or listen to Orsillo or watching the catch from Tatis. I mean, he's a platinum gold winner, a glove winner, right? From the past. There's
for a reason.
Yeah, absolutely.
There is no better call in baseball than Dan Orsillo calling a grand slam.
No,
slam
no
Diego. Like, it's so good.
And to think that he got fired from the Red Sox. That happened.
Every now and then teams make dumb decisions with their announcers, just like the White Sox letting Jason Benetti go. Okay, so the difference in this game and the Blue Jays Mets game is Seattle hung on to win. They won 5-2, and despite Fernando Tatis's efforts. And so now the Mariners are only 3.5 games back behind the Houston Astros. I still don't know if there is a path for the Mariners to catch the Astros. Again, it's 3.5 games, but the Astros feel like they're kind of inevitable. And it has to be that to make the postseason, because they are the third team out of the wild card. They are 4 games back of the Minnesota Twins. And ahead of them is the Boston Red Sox, who I believe have the tiebreaker against them, and the Detroit Tigers. Is there any shot the Seattle Mariners find a way to be playing meaningful October baseball?
There is a small chance in my mind. And the reason I say that is because if you look at both the Astros and the Mariners' schedule the rest of the way, the Houston Astros still have to play the Cleveland Guardians and the San Diego Padres, you know, 3 games apiece there. Oh, and then if for some reason they slip a little more, Lindsay, and that game, that lead that's 3.5 games right now gets a little closer, they have a 3-game series with the Seattle Mariners. So I do think that there is a possibility that can happen. I thought we closed the book on this division. I thought we did. Same. But to be honest with you, Lindsay, the Seattle Mariners had a pretty large lead at one point. The Houston Astros caught up. There is no reason to think that Mariners can't do it right back to the Astros. I do think that, you know, eventually we're going to see the Astros find a way to make it into the postseason. And if they do, then just watch out. But there's a chance that we might see Seattle sneak in. I don't know. That's a crazy way to think of it, because I didn't think we'd that would happen. What we saw from them over the last couple, you know, really last month since they fired Scott Service. So there's a chance. And I think that's all you need right now in the month of September.
Yeah, they're three against the Yankees, three against the Astros. They're a tough series, but they got three against the A's and seven against the Rangers. So you who obviously have been dreadful this year, you feel like there's an opportunity there for them to make a push if they can get better production out of their offense on a consistent basis. Staying with a West Coast team, Shohei Ohtani and the Los Angeles Dodgers won another wild game. This one 10-8 over the Chicago Cubs. I think the biggest takeaway for me here was not MLB.com putting out a graphic that the Dodgers swept the series. That was weird. But two things. One is the starting pitching continued to be a problem for everybody here. And then how good Cody Bellinger has been. So looking at the starting pitching first, Wicks for the Cubs, 7 runs on 8 hits and 4 walks in just 3 innings. He gives up 4 home runs. He allows Ohtani to hit one, his 47th in the first inning. Tommy Edman gets 2, one of them off of Wicks. Will Smith gets a homer in the first, and Max Muncy gets a homer in the first. So if I told you the Dodgers hit 4 home runs and only one of them would be from the big three, I don't think anybody would have put money on that. But Shohei Ohtani also steals the base. So 47 homers, 48 stolen bases. That 50-50 feels pretty much on lock there. Flip side, Bobby Miller for the Dodgers. 4 1/3 innings, 5 hits, 6 runs, 4 walks, 2 strikeouts. He gives up homers to, I almost said Kurt Suzuki. That's not the right Suzuki. but Suzuki and then Cody Bellinger. And on that Bellinger note, I want to get to Belly in a second. What do you do with Bobby Miller? Like, at this point, he went from being really good last year. I mean, he had an ERA, not really good, ERA in the threes, really lots of red on the stat cast, to being one of the worst pitchers in baseball this year. It's an 8.17 ERA. And even if you go with the expected ERA, that's still a 7 and change. What do you do with Bobby Miller?
Yeah, that's a really good question, what you do with him. I think he's going to be a really interesting offseason topic this year, Lindsay, because he's only 25 years old.
Former first-round pick.
As you mentioned, you know, he had a decent season last year with a lot of good looking in his stat cast, his baseball savant profile. But it's not there this year. When we did a quick look before the show, it didn't look not like much changed with his arsenal. It just wasn't working. So there's something, some underlying metrics that we're not seeing without doing a deep dive. We're going to have to do that this offseason, have a segment on him for sure, and see what the next path is. I stepped into a Dodgers postgame show last night after the game, and I will say that fans are ready to say goodbye to Bobby Miller. And I don't think that's a unreasonable thing to ask for when you have an 8.17 ERA in 12 starts this season. And in your last 7, that ERA is even higher. It's up to 9. So it's not improving. So I do think that we might have seen the last start of Bobby Miller this season, even with the injuries to the Dodgers. And we might have seen his last start as a Dodger.
Yeah. And this is just something. Like, yes, you probably want your team to go get a talented dude. I mean, he can throw 98 miles an hour on that fastball. It was a really good pitch last year. But at the same time, it's like, if the Dodgers can't fix a pitcher, can your team do it better than they can? That's kind of the question. Maybe the Rays are one of, you know, pitching savants. Maybe they go and they get Bobby Miller. It just doesn't feel like there's a clear path forward here on what Bobby Miller does. But going to Cody Bellinger real quick. 1 for 3, has a, I think it's a 3-run homer. In there off of Bobby Miller. And so his last 13 games versus the Dodgers, this came after the 5th inning home run last night. He has 6 homers in 13 games. I think twofold question. One, does Cody Bellinger exercise that opt-out in his contract and leave Chicago after this season? And if he does, could you see him going to be the center fielder in LA again?
I think that that book is closed. I think that we won't see him return to the Dodgers. Although I think you get some mixed results. I think some people would be happy to have him back and some people are just ready to write him off in that case. I think a lot of people are mad that he's no longer a Dodger and he's doing really well. No, it's time to write him off. But I don't think that's, I think that's done. But when you look at his stats this year, and then you look at what kind of offseason he had with the Boris thing, and then you look at the plans of what 2025 looks like for the Cubs, the fact that they did not trade him at the deadline, Lindsay, I think that's saying something. You have to, I have a feeling they had a conversation between Jed Hoyer and Cody Bellinger. So if I'm a betting man, which I'm not, but if I was, I would say that Cody Bellinger remains a Chicago Cub. He goes out and picks up his option for 2025 because his numbers are not bad. But I think he's going to be a little gun shy after what happened with Boris last offseason.
Yeah, we've already seen at least one player switch off of Scott Boris this offseason. Matt Chapman went ahead and signed an extension versus going to free agency again. Be curious to see what happens. I do want to point out that LA's offseason is going to be really interesting. They have 11 pending free agents this year. And it's, you know, it's all over. Teoscar Hernandez in the outfield. Kevin Kiermaier, they acquired at the deadline to play center field. He's kind of a part-time guy. He's a free agent. They do have Tommy Edman again for next year, but they also don't really have anything locked in at shortstop either. And, you know, Miguel Rojas will be a free agent. There's an option there. It's, I could see a scenario where if Bellinger was available, they maybe kick the tires on him. I don't think they end up bringing him back, but I could see where they at least have a meeting with him simply because you can then move Edman to center to back to shortstop. And it gives you flexibility if something happens. You can bring in a, you know, you can bring a free agent as a back, as a utility guy, backup guy, and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, something like that. And then if you have an injury in the outfield, you could move Edman back to center field if you need to. So I could see having the conversation. I don't know if it actually happens.
If he goes back to the Dodgers, and I think we have our answer of where Bobby Miller goes, he'll go to the Chicago Cubs. That's where all the broken Dodgers apparently go. And then maybe he'll go back to the Dodgers later on in life. So maybe that just is foreshadowing some other events in the future, Lindsay.
Yeah. Quick note, speaking to Tommy Edman, he now has 4 homers in 2 games. So it feels like, you know, he's fully recovered from that wrist injury. And the fact that they have him for another season after this may end up being one of the better moves of the trade deadline, simply because they possibly fix shortstop this year and next year as well. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks a lot,
there.
John Mozeliak. I appreciate it.
Yeah, went well there. Okay, the New York Yankees playing the Kansas City Royals. This has been a fun series, golly. But they get a walk-off from Jazz Chisholm Jr. And it was really kind of fun there, you know, for the 4-3 victory. Jazz talked to the media after the game. And the quote here, we got a strikeout to end the 8th inning, and the whole crowd erupted. And I was just wide-eyed and was like, this is sick. It ain't even October yet. I can't wait. I don't really have a lot of analysis for this other than just, yo, it's really cool that Jazz Chisholm is going to get to play in the postseason. He did have 2 postseason games last year for Miami. They lost both wildcard games and went home. But getting to play meaningful playoff games on a really good team, I'm just happy for Jazz. It feels like this isn't something that every player gets to do. I believe there's lots of former players who were like, I never played in the postseason. Mike Trout hasn't done it since he was really early in his career and they've never won a playoff game. Shohei Ohtani's never played in the playoffs. And so you just always kind of get excited when good, talented players get a chance to play in October.
Yep, no, I agree with you 100%. By chance, did he mention in the post-game conference that he should also be the leadoff hitter? Did he say that? He didn't. Oh, dang.
He did not, but he absolutely needs to be. That's the point we've been driving home here for a while. He needs to be the leadoff hitter.
One last thing about these Yankees before we move to the quick pitch, because I know we're burning time today. But
yeah.
Aaron Judge, I think we have to blame Paw Patrol for, you know, Nickelodeon from them taking away 60 home runs of Aaron Judge from us. He's now on pace for only 55.
Oh, what a bum. But Judge and Soto did have 100 RBI each. First pair of Yankees to do that since 2011. And that was actually 3 players. Mark Teixeira had 111. Robinson Cano had 118. And Curtis Granderson had 119. So definitely a lot of runs being driven in the Bronx. Imagine how many more RBI they'd have if Jazz Chisholm was on base in front of them.
Love it.
Okay. Go into quick pitch real quick. We're going to have to actually be quick with this. New number one prospect now that now that Junior Caminero has graduated the Tampa Bay Rays, new number one prospect, Roman Anthony, center fielder for the Boston Red Sox. Not going to say I told you so, but we talked about this last week, and I believe I predicted it would be Roman Anthony. In your defense, you also wanted to predict Roman Anthony, but I took it first. So deserving of number one prospect, or is there a more of a debate here than we realize?
No, definitely deserving, and shout out to the Red Sox for once again making a mistake, in my opinion, by letting Chane Bloom go. 2 years after you drafted Roman Anthony as a comp pick, he becomes the number one overall prospect in baseball. So look at that. Two things. You fired Dan Orsillo and you got rid of Chane Bloom. There's a lot of things you're messing up with for the Red Sox. Come on.
They also went and got James Paxton, currently on the 60-day IL with a partially torn right calf muscle. Won't make it back until after the regular season. So if Boston makes the postseason, he is expected, they're four games back, he's expected to be available to pitch sometime in October, again, if they make it. He announced he is planning on retiring after the season. He went on Baseball Isn't Boring, who also earlier, I think it was late last week, early this week, had your boy Lindsay on to talk about the Atlanta Braves. So go listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, because they've had me on a couple times this year talking about the Atlanta Braves. But James Paxton, good career, great career. How do we feel about James Paxton?
Yeah, he had a good career. I think that the injuries and what's happened over this last season has, you know, has hurt what we've thought of Big Maple there. But he's had some really good years, especially in Seattle. And then, you know, him playing in New York was not bad as well. So, yeah, I think he had a good career. I don't think we're going to see him in Cooperstown or anything, if that's what you're asking. But
unless he's going to visit one of his friends who gets inducted. Yeah,
100%. But I do think that, you know, when you look back at his career, you have to say, you know, he changed the game for what we saw over the last decade.
Yeah. 2014 through 2018, he had a 3.50 ERA across 558 innings in Seattle. So shout out James Paxton. Congratulations on a great career. Hopefully you have a chance to pitch in October and this isn't the way you have to end it. Okay. Jackson Merrill. We talked about the Padres game earlier. He has 23 homers, 16 stolen bases, batting .286. He is the fifth rookie center fielder under 21 in history to hit 20 homers. Listen to this list. Willie Mays, 1951. Mike Trout, 2012. Bryce Harper, 2012. While we had two guys in the same year. Julio Rodriguez, 2022. Are we not talking enough about Jackson Merrill's season?
Yeah, I think he's overshadowed by Paul Skenes and the great things he's had right now. But him being an everyday player and doing what he's doing. And by the way, this is his first year in center field. Never played center field in the minors as well, and he's doing this. And he's also doing a great defensive job as well. Yeah, we're not talking about him enough. I do think he's going to be he's going to receive a lot of first place votes when it comes to NL Rookie of the Year. I just don't know who's going to win now. It's really up in the air.
Yeah, I do think it should be Paul Skenes because, yes, this is a great year for Merrill. But Skenes is doing things that literally have almost never been done in baseball history. And I think a lot of people forget that. And they just say, well, go to the everyday guy. But I legitimately think Paul Skenes has made 20 starts. He's been worth 5.2 war. It's absurd. So it feels like Skenes deserves to be. If you can win 10 games with an ERA under 2.2 for the Pirates, you deserve to be Rookie of the Year.
100%. Okay.
Speaking of a guy who was a rookie last year, having a great second year, Ezekiel Tovar of the Colorado Rockies, batting .268, hit his 43rd double yesterday. That is the most for Colorado since Nolan Arenado had 43 doubles in 2017. So Tovar at shortstop, .268, 22 homers, 6 stolen bases. Here's my question, I think. Two-part question. One, is this a core for Colorado that could eventually contend for a wild card spot in the National League? And two, how excited are you for your Cardinals to get Ezekiel Tovar in four seasons?
Yeah, right. Could it be a core? Yes. Will it be? Who knows? Because the Colorado Rockies just never do things that everybody else, that every other team in the league does, right?
Right.
So I think that there's a really strong possibility of Tovar, you know, being a big part of a core moving forward. They also have Charlie Condon, you know, from, you know, draft pick.
Condon, that's
doing pretty well. So, yeah, I mean, I want to be optimistic about it.
Brandon Doyle, Nolan Jones, there's pieces.
But what have we seen from these Colorado Rockies the last decade, right? When we get to the trade deadline, everybody's like, well, the Rockies are probably going to sell, but we don't know because they always, you know, Dick Monfort just does his own thing. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Final thing here before we go, I want to take a second. We're probably going to go a little bit over our self-imposed deadline of 30 minutes here. I want to talk real quick about Jerry Reisendorf with the Chicago White Sox because he put out a statement yesterday about the season that they've had. I'm going to read it to you verbatim because I can't make this up. Everyone in this organization is extremely unhappy with the results of this season. That goes without saying. This year has been very painful for all, especially our fans. We did not arrive here overnight, and solutions won't happen overnight either. Going back to last year, we have made difficult decisions and changes to begin building a foundation for future success. What has impressed me is how our players and staff have continued to work and bring a professional attitude to the ballpark each day, despite a historically difficult season. No one is happy with the results, but I commend the continued effort. I expect to have more to say at the end of the season. What is the point of this statement?
I think it's about 5 months too late, if anything. But yeah, I have no idea what he's trying to get to with this. I really have no idea. Your manager right now is somebody who was, you know, a former MLB player, sure, but was an intern just a year ago. So, I mean, you don't really have much to say in the space, right? And then you also are about to break the record for the most losses in all of MLB history ever. There's just, I don't know what this has to do. Is this to help your team morale to be even lower so to make sure that you break the record? I'm not sure. The biggest thing that I took away from this, though, is the last sentence. I expect to have more to say at the end of the season. What are you going to say? Are you going to fire somebody else? I mean, what is the next move for this? We're going to have a lot to unpack with the White Sox this offseason because they're going to have to make some sort of moves because you can't field this team in 2025 again. You absolutely cannot do it.
I feel like you're almost at the point where MLB is going to privately pressure you to improve the team because it's just, the reputation is bad, but it's also hurting attendance and all of that, which, you know, some of that stuff gets like some of that that money gets spread around the league. And the worse your team is being generationally bad, the worse that it makes baseball look and it hurts the earning potential of everybody else. So I imagine you're almost at the point where they're going to say something. Here's what sucks though. They can't even pick in the top 10 this year. They're going to have the worst record in baseball. They are ineligible to pick in the top 10 because they are a large market team who picked in the lottery last year. So you even tanked it you can't even tank correctly. It's absurd. 33-114. At this point, I want to see them hit the record. They're 45 and a half games out. They're not going to obviously fix anything. They're not going to catch the Angels. The Angels are 60-86. You're 27 games behind the Los Angeles Angels.
It's a problem. That's all I got. Yeah, a lot of things need to be fixed here. No, absolutely.
Yeah. This has been First Pitch for Thursday, September 12th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor. Leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, leave a comment down below. Subscribe to the channel. Until next time, this has been First Pitch.